There are 7.5 billion people in this world, driving over 1.5 billion vehicles. 363 million of those vehicles are commercial. These vehicles are transporting people, goods, and services that all do their part to keep the world in motion. From the most populous of places on Earth to the most remote places only accessible during the right conditions. It is not often that we realize how much everyone and everything is constantly in motion until it stops. When it stops, that is where we come in. To grab, pull, push, winch, hoist, jump, unstick, unlock, or just plain maneuver you out of the mess you found yourself in. Some would call us drivers, operators, first responders, or essential workers. But I like to think of us as heroes from the ditch.
I grew up in an age when truck drivers were still respected and admired in most circles. A condition of employment at my family's business is still that any candidate must have watched Smokey and the Bandit and Convoy. Many of my childhood mentors were professional drivers. I didn't even learn their real names until later in life. I'd only heard them called by their CB handles. Drivers named Moonrunner, Spaceman, Weatherman, Bumblebee and Toothpick, well, those were the heroes of my youth. These were drivers who knew the rules of the road and followed them, knowing that their life and the lives of those around them depended on a disciplined approach to their job. Well, today, commercial drivers have little respect for the weight of their vehicle, and they treat others on the road as adversaries. The highway becomes an arena where nameless foes take their aggression on one another while making their way to their GPS-guided destinations. Little thought and little planning go into negotiating the asphalt obstacles ahead of them. I remember driving out of the gate and down the long driveway at a trucking terminal years ago. Along the way, the five keys of the Smith system were posted at intervals. Aim high. Get the big picture. Keep your eyes moving. Leave yourself an out and make sure they see you. These small signs were meant to remind the truck drivers of the huge importance of their training in the Smith system for defensive driving. Our towing and recovery industry is seeing the benefit of training related specifically to tactics in the ditch. But until we embrace the importance of training for behind the wheel, the ditch is where we'll end up. I'd like you to think about the frame of mind that you're in when you take the wheel. Consider you've just spent 90 minutes working at a sprint to clear the roadway following a traffic collision. You've met your deadline for quick clearance and adrenaline is still flowing. You hop in the cab of the wrecker and you begin reliving the action from the successful job that you just completed. As you're leaning over to pluck a blue paper towel off of the roll to wipe the sweat off of your face, you begin to merge blindly onto the roadway. You're startled back into reality as a horn blares and tires screech from the car that you almost ran over. Are you mentally prepared for driving, or are you distracted by the prior action in the ditch? Consider that you've just spent 30 minutes hooking to a tractor and trailer. The drive shaft is disconnected and secured. The air system is properly inflated, and you've enabled the service brakes on the trailer and the truck. Secondary attachment chains are crossed and secured. The primary attachment is spot on. The driver of the CMV that you're towing off of the highway is highly impressed with your work. He says, you know, that's not how they do it on Highway Through Hell. You shift through the gears while the cat engine stomps out 600 horses to the ground. The straight pipes are cackling, and man, you feel on top of the world. Well, your client turned fanboy, and you strike up a conversation about the latest episode about that treacherous Coca-Cola highway. You have a new friend in the cab. The conversation is so lively and engaging that you don't notice the traffic ahead of you is slowing down. In a panic, you hit the brakes, you change lanes, and somehow you miss the adjacent traffic and make it safely to a clear lane. Well, fanboy shuts up real quick. Have you ever had a client compliment the performance of your wrecker or carrier. Something like this: "Man, this truck doesn't even know that mine's back there," they say. Consider that you've towed a loaded, single-axle grain truck to your shop for a brake assessment. The client said, "It just doesn't feel like the brakes are working." So while towing it in, you didn't exceed the posted speed limit, but you didn't waste any time through the curves either. So the brake assessment was completed and no defects were found, so you test drove the unit. Holy crap! That thing drove terrible. It was all over the road, and he was right. It won't stop. Well, come to find out, the truck had 500 bushels of corn in the bed. It was a little overweight. Hooking that casualty to your wrecker didn't improve its own stability and handling. Sometimes the wrecker, being so large and heavy, masks the warning signs of danger behind you. The combination vehicle you're now at the helm of can be up to 3 times, maybe even more, heavier. It's difficult enough to stop with an empty wrecker or rollback, but add in the weight and odd handling characteristics of a casualty in tow or in transport, and there's something to consider. The previous examples are real-life near misses that I endured. If they sound familiar to you, please keep listening. How much training have you had specific to driving a commercial vehicle? Prior to February of 2022, a commercial driver simply had to pass a written and skills test to obtain a commercial driver's license. In preparation for these tests, some training and experience may have been gained, but maybe just enough to pass. Now, a minimum of 30 hours of driving experience through an entry-level driver training program is currently required by the FMCSA. But that's only 1 week's worth of part-time employment. That's 30 hours. Now, consider how many towing operators don't hold a CDL, but operate commercial vehicles. They have no more training than my 16-year-old who just got his learner's permit. A for-hire wrecker is indeed a commercial vehicle. That classification alone isn't what makes training and experience behind the wheel a necessity. The handling qualities of a towing vehicle are dynamic. The weight of the towed vehicle, the method of attachment, current weather and road conditions are all factors that influence how a wrecker or carrier will handle. It's incorrect to assume that your wrecker will respond or react the same when it's empty versus loaded or in all weather conditions. I've had the benefit of learning from a brilliant gentleman named Gordon Graham. Mr. Graham has an extensive law enforcement background, and he delivers training for first responders. The core of his content centers around assessing risk and your responses to it. Graham suggests that any external stimulus can be categorized and responded to in a systematic way. The categories of risk are ranked by their frequency and severity in a risk assessment matrix. For a towing and recovery operator, a common risk is the physical act of stepping or climbing into a tow truck. This is a high-frequency but low-risk event. We do it all of the time, and the risk of injury is relatively low. An example of a low-frequency, low-risk event could be replacing the winch line on your carrier. Some degree of risk is involved, but it's relatively low, and it typically doesn't occur more than once or twice a year. These are areas where training is simple to conduct, and creating a safe work environment for the training doesn't involve a tremendous amount of risk. The next category is referred to as high risk and high frequency. An example of this would be changing a tire on the traffic side of a client's vehicle on a busy highway. This is a commonplace service that towers offer, but one that can claim a life and does so often in our industry. Didactic or knowledge-based training can be done by sharing thoughts and ideas, but having a hands-on workshop alongside the interstate for how to change a tire is clearly out of the question. Finally, what I feel is the most challenging risk in the matrix is the low-frequency, high-risk category. These rarely happen, but when they do, they can be catastrophic. We're not prepared for them, and there's no safe way to physically train for them. So, let's have a conversation about preparing our minds for two low-frequency but high-risk scenarios. How often in your career do you expect to experience the effects of a steering tire failure while traveling at highway speeds? Not often, I hope. This type of experience could be classified as a low-frequency event. I've been towing professionally since 1997. In that time, I've experienced one steering tire failure on the wrecker that I was driving and one on a casualty that I was towing backward. That's one every 12 and a half years if you consider both of them. I'd consider that low frequency. But what about the risk? During my career, I've seen some terrible images of wreckers that have wrecked on the highway as a result of a steering tire failure. Some have been horrific and fatal. The event that I experienced occurred in the very early morning hours after a long night of driving. I wasn't at my best, I admit. I was tired, but not for long. When that 385 65R225 float blew out, I was immediately awake, and I had prepared myself for what I'd hoped would never happen, so that when it did, I wouldn't wreck my truck. Here's how mental preparation takes place for this high-risk, low-frequency event, a failed steering tire. It all begins with taking control of your emotions and your reactions. The first order of business is to remain calm and collected. To prevent tragedy, this must happen in a millisecond. Once you've gathered your senses, get control of your wrecker. In most cases, this means keeping your truck moving straight ahead. Don't make rapid or harsh corrections. Gently and smoothly manage the wheel so that your truck stays in its lane. Next, let off of the accelerator. Allow the truck to begin coasting and slowing down on its own. You've gotten control and you're in one lane, so begin identifying a path to the shoulder. Make gradual course corrections, moving your rig off to the shoulder. Once you've identified where you want to stop, steadily and slowly apply the brakes and come to a stop safely out of the roadway. The key moments in this event are: number one, as soon as it happens, remain calm. Number two, keep your truck under control and in one lane, no sudden corrections. And number three, carefully and gently move to the shoulder and stop. I would encourage you to think through these steps as you're driving. That way, you'll be in the same environment where you'll have to make these decisions should a high-risk, low-frequency event like a steering tire failure occur. This isn't something that you want to rehearse in real life, so doing so is just too dangerous. But with proper mental planning, you'll know what to do should the unthinkable and undesirable happen. So another high-risk, low-frequency event to prepare for is an accidental disconnect of the casualty from the towing vehicle. As a professional operator, you should be securing the casualty in a manner that prevents side-to-side, up-and-down, and front-to-rear movement of the casualty in the wheel lift or underlift towing device. Tie-down devices should have sufficient strength to retain the casualty into the towing device. And should the primary tie-down fail, the secondary attachment chains are meant to keep the casualty behind you. Securing the steering wheel will prevent its steering tires from turning and taking it and your truck out of control. Here's the mental procedure for dealing with a disconnect. In any high-risk, low-frequency event, mental poise, which is calmness under pressure, is the most important attribute. As soon as you notice that a towed vehicle has disconnected while in tow, calm yourself and become hyper-aware of your surroundings. Maintain control of the wrecker or carrier first and foremost. Keep it in the lane of travel and let off the accelerator. Once you've gained or maintained control, prepare for the casualty to run into the back of your wrecker. This is not the time to worry about scratching the underlift or tailboard. Once the casualty has made contact with the back of the wrecker, let the secondary attachment chains do their job as you gradually coast to a safe place to stop. The secondary attachment chains should be crossed between the towing vehicle and the casualty. This method of attachment will keep the casualty from tracking no further than one half the width of the vehicle if it becomes disconnected. Harsh braking or sudden attempts to stop should be avoided unless a frontal collision is imminent and unavoidable. Just like in the event of a blowout, calmness and reliance on your mental training and preparation is key. I strongly encourage you to mentally rehearse these steps so that you're prepared to keep yourself and those around you safe in a crisis. Insurance companies are in business to provide coverage against a risk that becomes reality. Sideswiped vehicles are the number one transportation-related claim 3 years running for a large insurance brokerage who made their national losses public. This type of collision, when viewed from the insurance lens, is high frequency and high risk. But it can be so simple to mitigate. The most basic of corrective measures is to adjust the vehicle's mirrors to your height and seated position in the cab of the wrecker or carrier. Before you venture onto the road, check your mirrors for the following criteria. If you have to lean forward or backward to get a good view of what's going on alongside your vehicle, your mirrors aren't adjusted properly. Having to reposition your body to the side to see what needs to be seen may only take a second, but that's an additional second that your eyes are off of the highway ahead. Make sure that each mirror is adjusted so that a quick glance will allow you to see what needs to be seen and then return your focus to the road. Having concave spot mirrors mounted to the fender may be ugly to most, me included. But for a higher profile vehicle, they can open the view to a dangerous blind spot near the vehicle's front fenders. Merging or turning without having a clear view of everything on the side of the vehicle can lead to a sideswipe or a side collision. Once you've loaded a vehicle for tow or transport, make necessary adjustments to the mirrors before you leave. The tow truck's length and height may have changed. Make sure that you can properly see everything going on behind you and beside you through your mirrors. One more transportation claim that makes the top three list is the rear-end collision. I hold the belief that striking the rear of another vehicle is 100% avoidable. Yes, I'm at fault for rear-ending a couple of cars in my day. Collision data indicates that inattention, insufficient following distance, and improper speed for the conditions that are present are the major aggravators that lead to rear-end collisions, mine included. This is another very simple risk to mitigate. The next time you're driving in traffic, look ahead at the vehicle directly in front of you. As it passes a reference marker, a tree, a signpost, a pothole, Lord knows there are plenty of those out there, begin counting. Count the number of seconds that it takes for you to reach that reference marker. If your following distance is 4 seconds or less, I implore you, add a second. Focus on the road ahead and repeat the process until you have between 4 and 5 seconds following distance while traveling at highway speeds between you and the vehicle in front of you. When conditions change, add at least another second to that. When you double the speed of your vehicle, the required braking force to stop it must also be doubled. When you double the weight of your vehicle, the required force to stop is also doubled. Now consider what happens when you're towing or transporting a casualty of identical weight as your wrecker or rollback, and you double your speed from 40 to 80 miles an hour. The force required to stop your wrecker and the loaded vehicle is exponential. The force is 8 times what it would be if your truck were empty and running 40 miles an hour. My recommendation for preventing rear-end collisions are simple. Number one, slow down. Number two, increase your following distance. And number three, always keep your eyes moving ahead and get the big picture about what's happening in front of you and beside you. Your attitude and mental preparation for the simple act of driving needs to be considered as important as any other task that you might train for or practice. I hope that you and I and others like us can usher in a new era of professional drivers. It's terrible that those of us that make a living behind the wheel are no longer revered as the highway heroes of my youth were. So I hope that you'll take what I've discussed and implement these thoughts and strategies into your own discipline. Let's make the snowman and the rubber duck proud. For Wreckmaster, I'm Casey Burns. See you in the ditch. Well, good evening, good morning, wherever you are. Thank you again for tuning into this installment of Heroes from the Ditch. I'm Casey Burrows, and this evening I'm joined with my colleague, Dave Bovier.
Hi, everybody.
Dave has been an instructor with Wreckmaster. How long, Dave? How long has it been?
Just completed my 20th year in January, Casey.
20 years. Dude, I don't have to tell you that that's a long time.
Yeah. I'm pretty excited, and I'm still passionate, and I still have the drive. So as long as I keep that, I'm going to continue on, and you remind me if I begin to lose that.
Well, I tell you, anybody that I've ever encountered, and me personally, there is a very intriguing David that shows up when the white shirt and the black tie come on and he stands in front of a class. I admire the passion and the excitement that you bring to what we do, the information that we deliver, the times that we have with these towing and recovery professionals out there. You bring life and excitement to the room as you deliver a class. So I consider it a true honor to have learned under you this instructor gig. And I hope that I can have half as much passion in this industry as you do. So thank you for that. It certainly shows in what you do.
Jeez, I don't even know what to say to that. Thank you, Casey.
Well, there you go. You say
I'm humbled. I'm humbled by that.
Well, the reason we're together is because our listeners have just heard a monologue, a talk on defensive driving. And, you know, I firmly believe in being genuine and truthful. Number one, because if I ever tell a lie, I'll have to remember something else. I think Mark Twain said it a whole lot better. But I really like to share real life experience, even if it makes me look like an idiot, which I think that's a really good quality because I have a lot to learn. I'm an idiot and I've made a lot of mistakes. And the listeners heard, and you got to hear a few cases where I screwed up. Behind the wheel, I have made mistakes, costly mistakes that were totally preventable. And later in life, I've learned strategies to never do those again. And I would be remiss in my duties as just a fellow human if I didn't share some of those experiences and maybe a few tips and tricks along the way for how to not do what I have done that's landed myself in trouble. So just reflect for a minute on what you heard, and let's begin digging in a little bit deeper to some of that content for how we can help towing operators mitigate risk, keep themselves safe and those around them safe, because that's what we're all about is going home safely at the end of the shift.
Well, don't beat yourself up there too bad there, Casey, because there is a difference between an accident and a crash, right? I mean, an accident is an unforeseeable, unpreventable occurrence. And at least one of those incidents, no two, I think, that I heard you talk about, I would definitely put in that category.
Well, you're being too kind. I mean, I'm an idiot, remember?
Well, they say ignorance can be bliss.
Oh, I've heard that. Right?
And I'm ignorant about a lot of things. I can tell you this. I'm smarter than I was yesterday, but I am damn sure dumber than I'm going to be tomorrow.
So that means there's room for improvement, right? And that's right.
Well, you know what? We'd all like to be perfect drivers. But I think if we really look, we can all remember, an incident or something that we did that we look back on and regret doing, or could have done better, or whatever it may be. While we'll never be perfect, I think everybody can agree that we could all be more perfect.
Right. Well, there's steps to take towards that. There's, training and experience. When you put those two things together, you get confident, but behind the wheel, there's such a thing as overconfidence. And I've experienced that. I think my little story about my friend who complimented the job, and then I got carried away in conversation, and the potential existed for me to take out 10 or 15 cars towing a loaded tractor trailer down the highway. I think that's overconfidence.
It's overconfidence that leads to complacency. That's what it leads to. Some of the things that did strike me in your monologue were, you talked a lot about risk, and I like talking about risk as well, especially when it comes to driving. Driving is a huge passion of mine, and I know that's why you had asked me to jump in on you with this. Geez, I taught kids to drive for years, taught them to pass a road test. I did evaluations on elderly and medical evaluations.
Okay, so you drivers had to constantly cancel the right turn signal. I guess that's what you're saying?
Yeah. But risk is defined as a chance of injury, damage, or loss. And managing risk while driving involves controlling time, visibility, space, and having an awareness of the available traction. And I think you covered, just about every one of those.
And I didn't even know it.
In your monologue. Yeah, you did, in one way or another. And each one of those overlaps each other.
Right.
Just as an example, let's talk about when you were talking about following distance and stopping distance, right? Well, how far ahead are we looking while we drive? Because I often find myself looking just beyond the hood of my car,
right,
or whatever it might be I'm driving. But we need to be looking far enough ahead so we can see any potential changes that may be necessary in our driving pattern, because there's a couple of things, perception and reaction time, right?
Mm, yeah.
Once you spot it, then your brain has to process it and has to process the response to it. And then you have to react to that response. And that takes time as well. So when you talked about following distance, boy, and stopping distance, there's a whole lot of elements that come into play with the reasoning why that's so important, right? And traction has something to do with that, because now we got road conditions, right? Up here in the Northeast, especially, we're driving in the winters and there's snow and ice, and even wet roads are requiring
You say Northeast, my parts down here, we refer to that as Yankees.
Sorry, yeah. That's okay. That's okay.
We get a little snow and ice down here, but I love how you indicate that all those things overlap. So available time, the amount of time that you need to make a decision. So if you don't have enough time to make a decision and avoid a collision, well, that indicates to me that you're following too close to something that you could collide with. Visibility. If visibility is obstructed, that's going to reduce the amount of time, because you're having to decipher basically what it is you're seeing through the windshield or maybe through the fog. And then, the space, all that leads to, how much distance there is between you and an obstruction, but really whatever you're following. And all those things really do work together in a symbiotic way. I mean, they all, one relies upon the other or directly affects the other.
Yeah, they certainly do. And I'm glad you brought that up, because not only do those things have to rely on one another and directly affect one another, but the actions of other drivers and our own actions affect one another. Driving is a collaboration. It's a team effort for everybody who's out there on the road. And it just seems that there's such an anonymity being in the shell of the car. And it's funny because people don't often treat one another the same as, I'll use the example of entering an elevator, right? If I'm entering an elevator and there's a young lady standing next to me or whatever, I'll say, oh, excuse me. And let her, do we handle intersections the same way?
Heck no, I was here first.
Exactly. Exactly. So I think, you know, we lose, we somehow lose that personal, you know, the human part of respect and giving each other that.
That sounds a lot like social media there, Dave.
Yeah, I know. I guess it kind of is.
That whether it's the windshield, the car body, whatever it is, I know exactly what you're talking about, because I've had that feeling when, you know, whether it's somebody that followed too close to me, well, that left an impression, or maybe they were sending a text message and they slowed down, so I had to pass them, and now they're come up on me and tailgate me again and pass me again. So, you know, all of these things start to develop emotion within me that changes my attitude behind the wheel. And so when a person, for whatever reason, if my emotion and attitude has changed toward them, I don't know them, but if we're in close proximity out on the highway and I start making decisions based on my emotion, well, I'm going to close the gap. I'm going to make sure that they know I'm back there and that I don't like what they've done a mile back or whatever. We're sending these messages to basically nameless people, but our attitude is so driven by how we feel about the way somebody else drives or acts on the highway. So what kind of strategies, what would suggestions would you offer a guy like me who can occasionally behind the wheel let his emotions or attitude change? How do we get back into a proper frame of mind to make good choices behind the wheel?
Well, I really liked in your monologue when you talked about emotion when faced with an emergency.
Right.
How to stay calm and collect yourself. I think the same thing applies. Staying calm and collect yourself, because it's never personal. If somebody makes a mistake while driving, and we do, and we will, it's never personal. It just happens. And I've made them. And I've tried to give the wave of, oh, I'm sorry. And often, you know, I get a dirty look. Or
which finger do you wave with?
I don't do that. I'm the guy that lets everybody pass. I'm a true believer in that. I give everybody the space. And if somebody makes a mistake, I just nod to them. I don't give them a look or anything, because there's too much of that. There's way too much of that. Driving is a dangerous activity in itself. And there's always risk present. You will never eliminate the risk associated with driving. If you don't want any risk, then don't get in a car, either as a driver or a passenger, because there's always going to be risk associated with that. And when we let our emotions get into that, emotions cloud judgment.
Right.
That's what happens. And then we can't process properly to react in a proper way. And it just makes a difficult situation for everybody. You can't collaborate with that. We talk about with these new EVs that are coming out, and the Tesla in particular with the autonomous feature.
Right.
Okay. It drives itself essentially. And someday all cars are going to do that, but it's got to be all or nothing. Because we can't share the road with computers, because computers have no emotions. They have no emotions. They can communicate with each other a lot better than we tend to want to communicate to each other while driving.
Yeah. You know? So our rapid overtaking or a brake check in front of somebody in front of an autonomous car. Well, you know, that's kind of got to defeat the purpose. We've not made anybody mad, but you know, it just drives to the human nature, out on the road. I mean, I know not everybody's like me, but I'm flawed. I'm human. And there are times when I just know I'm not in the right frame of mind to be behind the wheel. And in order to make it right, especially while piloting a commercial vehicle, attitude is everything. I mean, not to mention our own safety and the safety of those around us, but what about the image of the company who we're representing? I mean, somebody's name or the name of a corporation is plastered down the side of that big, beautiful truck, and the decisions that we make can influence the company's reputation. Where do we see that in past experience, or, you know, reflect on that a bit?
Well, I certainly have heard comments made from tow company owners and from office staff of tow companies that have gotten phone calls from, you know, Joe Public about, you know, your truck went by me and did this, or I seen your truck out there doing that. And in most cases, that was dealt with a pretty stern hand. Right. You know, companies can't afford that. They can't afford to have that kind of image or reputation out there when they're servicing the motoring public, you know?
Right. You could have a couple of 5-star reviews on your Google page, and then, you know, you get one star out of 10, and it's something as significant as how a driver acts out on the highway. Man, that could mean the difference between, you know, continuing to be successful or a bad public image.
Yeah, that's for sure. My advice would be, if anybody is ever faced with an aggressive driver, you can't really control what's behind you. To the sides of you, you can control a little bit, but what's behind you, you can't. I'd let them by. Let them in front of you. You have the greatest control over space, over time, in front of your vehicle than you do anywhere else around it. Take a deep breath and not let yourself sink to their emotional state, because that's just going to double the danger.
Well, that is so counter to most of us. I mean, again, this is just me. I mean, I'm hoping that I'm fairly normal, but when you say, if there's someone tailgating me, the last thing I want to do is to allow them in front of me. But that's, you know, that you're right. That is the best way to handle that. If you've got somebody who's driving aggressively, you know, just either tap the clutch, tap the brake, cancel the cruise, whatever it is, slow down, let them go on by, pretend they don't exist, keep aware, but don't indicate to them that they're changing your attitude or your emotions, because that would be they're in a different frame of mind. You know, look at our level 4 or 5, where we talk about parent, adult and child frame of mind. If confrontation on the highway is an argument, well, that argument's going to persist until we're both in the adult frame of mind. So get exactly yourself right into the adult frame of mind, slow down, let the child or the parent pass you up, and then you eliminate the risk by letting them go on, and just don't let it change your emotions anymore.
Well, it's not NASCAR, right? We should not be in a contest with other drivers.
Right.
We have to learn to let that go.
Well, the one thing I really didn't talk about in the podcast was the mechanical conditions of your truck, your tow truck or carrier. I mean, slick tires are no good. You know, worn out steering components, you know, mechanical defects that a professional operator should catch in a pre-trip inspection can lead to collisions, can lead to incidents, accidents. But if it's a mechanical defect, it's not an accident anymore. But the only way the owner's going to know that defect is there is if you report it. So what could you share with our listeners about what it takes to make sure your truck is ready for the highway?
Well, like you said, proper vehicle inspection. And as we're driving vehicles, we can feel it. You can feel if there's a difference in it, if the brakes begin to fade, right? Doing a proper view, make sure all your lighting is working so you can be seen. Make sure the windows are clean in the truck. And I know you've already mentioned that, but it's really important. All of those things. The vehicle itself is a critical component in the safety of of not only the driver of that vehicle, but the motoring public. So yeah, we have to be diligent in those inspections, and we have to really feel the vehicle for anything that's unusual.
Well, I know that the temptation for myself is, well, I just drove this truck yesterday and everything seemed fine yesterday. And I've got an early morning job, or maybe I'm late to work and have to hop in for a hot call. You know, the responsibility still lies in me as the professional driver and as the assigned driver of that truck to make sure it's mechanically sound and ready. You know, a proper inspection before every shift or at the end of every shift at the minimum, you know, it's required by law and is extremely important in reducing risk.
Well, at Wreckmaster, we like to use that word discipline. This is another area where we have to be disciplined. We have to discipline ourselves to force ourselves to do that. Lives are at stake.
Well, that they are. We, you know, we have a great responsibility when operating these trucks. You know, it was told to me early on that you're not given a driver's license. You've earned it. And
it's a privilege.
That's exactly where I was going. Being able to keep it is a privilege. And I think all of our listeners should be aware that, you know, when you're in this market, one of the most prized possessions that you should have is a clean driving record. And making good choices behind the wheel is foundational in that. You know, I don't want to sound too parental here, but making good choices behind the wheel, driving safely, increasing following distance, being aware of the amount of time that you have to make a decision, the visibility ahead, the space available to maneuver. And then, you know, what are the conditions like? How do all those things play into safely operating, especially a commercial vehicle?
I think you hit it on the head with every one of those points that you just made. You hit it right on the head. And if we can discipline ourselves to follow those points, to remember that time, visibility, space, and the available traction are the key elements of safe driving, that will reduce our level of risk to minimize the chance of injury, damage, or loss.
Well, David, I think that's a great way to wrap this up. I certainly do appreciate you being here with me tonight. I know all the folks out there certainly appreciate what you've done. I know all the students that I've had that have been with you certainly see that passion, and it shines through in everything that you do. So, folks out there, thank you very much for listening. It's an honor to bring this information to you, and I love sharing the ditch with you. So for Wreckmaster, I'm Casey Burrows. See you in the ditch.